Welcome to Ben Navarez Podcast with your host, Ben Navarez.
So, howdy, hi, and welcome back to the podcast. Kelly and I were already talking, so you guys are going to kind of pick up from where we left off. Kelly is from a little bit north of the DC area. He was talking about he still lives in that area. Most people make it out, and for whatever reason, he decided to stay. And he works in the Olympias, or has worked around the Olympic scene. So, Kelly, if you don't mind just continuing off, thank you for being here today and all those good things. What is it that you do, man?
Well, so my full-time job is I teach nutrition to high school. I teach high school nutrition. I had owned a powerhouse gym for almost a decade. That closed about 6 years ago, I guess. And somehow, some way, I ended up teaching nutrition. I'm not even sure how I ended up there. Cool. But I have about 1,000 different side gigs on the side. I own a nonprofit mental health organization for my fiance that we can talk about. I do leadership training through John Maxwell. I'm John Maxwell certified. So I go into companies and try and teach people. I do speaking and workshops. I do coaching services, leadership assessment, and really try and my focus is teaching people. I've been through a lot of crap in the last 14 years. And my focus is really teaching people that you can, you know, grow through what you go through, that no matter where you think you are, you're at the bottom and you can't make it, there's a way to kind of get through it. Throughout that time, 2000, let's see, when I owned Powerhouse Gym, 2007 to 2016, I guess, something like that. Some of the local people for the NPC here were putting on a show, and, you know, they needed a gym to be able to bring weights backstage and blah, blah. Oh, heck yeah, we want to partner with you. The lady that was going to be the sponsor for it, she owned a nutrition company here, Max Muscle Nutrition Company. So her and I got together. I said, what can I do? How do I help you out? I brought my employees over. We ran everything backstage. We were setting up, doing security, getting people in line. And, you know, 2007, 8, 9, 10, the way the NPC was run was definitely a little bit more casual than what it is now. Everybody in every place around the country, every show, not even around the country, you go to 5 different shows in Northern Virginia, DC, and Maryland, and they would all be run totally different. It was just, wow. You know, whoever was putting it on kind of got your people together and you put it together. So I started doing that, and somewhere around, I'm not even sure when the date would be, 2014, 15, something like that, the NPC really started tightening things up. And a friend of mine, Tony Roberts, who I have known from since the early 90s. We used to train at a gym, Gold's Gym in Alexandria here. That's cool. Contacted me and he was like, hey, do you want to be part of my team? I'm working the Olympia. I work a bunch of shows. We're trying to really make this thing more professional. And he put it together and I've been with him and kind of the what they call the A-team ever since. So we work, you know, nationals, North Americans, if you can. There's a team of, I don't know how many, 20 people, maybe something like that, maybe a little less than that. I do about probably 12 local NPC shows around here. So I'm backstage, I'm expediting. It might be as little as making sure everybody knows where to go, making sure everybody's lined up. We want it so the people that are in the audience and the judges don't have to worry about anything. And the other thing is to bring that experience into the competitors. You know, if anybody that's competed, it's a stressful day. And being backstage, you're carb depleted, you're angry, you're hungry, you're nervous, you got your coach, you know, stressing you out, all this crap. And we try and get everybody to just breathe and calm and be relaxed. We're like, just come here, take a deep breath and listen to us and it'll go smooth. So that's what I do. And I got invited to do that for the Olympia a couple times. And that was just phenomenal, to say the least. I've been around the sport since first time I competed was probably 1996, 97, something like that.
Damn.
So to be able to do that and go to the Olympia and kind of meet everybody has just been fantastic. And then now with my mental health foundation that I hope we talk about, there's been several of the athletes that have been just huge supporters. Sid Gillian, 5-time Miss Olympia. Andrea Shaw, same thing. They were big. They were friends with Sophia and worked with her. Hunter Labrada has been great. I mean, the guys have just been, everybody's just been fantastic with it. So that's kind of my jump in there. So when you said Vegas, I was like, ooh, my only go-to from Vegas is the Olympia. So,
I mean, to talk like that's like any, and for anybody that's ever existed in the fitness world, I think especially a lot of dudes. I mean, I first started looking at, like, you know, the Flex magazines when I was a kid, and I was like, oh, dude, I'm going to be a bodybuilder. Like, this is it, right? And you hear about the Olympia, and you hear about Ronnie, you hear about Cutler, you hear, like, all these guys, and, like, and that's even later in the times, right, when it was already pretty big. And so you're like, wow, like, that's the goal. That's the move.
Jay is absolutely one of the nicest guys in the world. I've known him for quite a long time, and his family is great. Ronnie, I've met and sat and talked to several times at the Olympia, at different events. Wow. He's kind of the same way, just fantastic. I was telling a kid at the gym the other night, he was a young kid, 18, 19 years old, talking to him about bodybuilding. And I was taking my shirt off, changing in the locker room. He goes, he was, you know, in the mirror flexing. He goes, excuse me, how long have you been doing this? And I said, I'm 54. I said, I started when I was 15, wrestling in high school at 98 pounds and trying to make weight just to get, not make weight under, like make weight up, like get to 98 pounds, you know? So I said, a long time. And he and I started talking, and it was just funny because, you know, I get that a lot. How long have you been doing this? What? But I don't even remember what I was going to tell you now. What were we talking about? Ronnie.
Sitting around those guys and growing up and finally seeing them.
In the mid-90s, I was at Gold's Alexandria. And at Gold's Alexandria, there was Don Long, if you remember that name, Willie Stallings, he was an IFBB pro, Maria Callo, she was Argentine national champion, took second, I think, in Night of Champions up in New York. Willie, his claim to fame still to this day, and I talk to him fairly regular, was he beat Jay Cutler in the 96 Nationals. Wow. So he got his pro card the year before. Don, I think, had gotten it the year before. Jack Smith, only lightweight to ever win Nationals overall and get his pro card. So it was just, it was this atmosphere at Gold's Alexandria. And, you know, you would walk into the gym, and it didn't matter how bad your day was. As soon as you walked in, you were like, oh, time to go. Like, let's get it. This is awesome, you know. And it's funny because I was in my mid-20s, you know, out of college, like you said, into working out and into part and around these people that back then nobody had coaches. There was no internet. You read Flex magazine, you got Muscle and Fitness, you waited for it to come out every month, you know. Oh shit, let me go get it. So you couldn't wait. But your only interaction was with them. If you were going to compete, whether it was powerlifting or bodybuilding, you went to the strongest guy in the gym and you said, hey, I was thinking about competing. What do you think? You know, now you're going to go find a coach and you're going to call them. And of course they're going to go, oh, you could win a show and I'm $5,000 and let me do, you know, there was none of that shit back then. You know, the first time I went to Don Long and I said, Don, I'm thinking about doing a show. And I knew him from the gym, and Dave Bautista trained there. So this was Dave Bautista when Bautista was fucking twice the size that he, can we kiss on this? He was twice the size that he is now. I remember watching Dave Bautista with 315 doing behind the neck presses, stroking it like it was 315. We were like, dude, my shoulders would rip, you know, just crazy. But I didn't think about that with them back then. They were just the guys in the gym. You know, there was no internet. There was no, they were in the magazines and you thought that was cool. But otherwise, you know, it was nothing. I tell you one of the funniest stories, and we would train with them. I had a workout partner, and he and I would jump in and train with these guys. Everybody was just nice. And I'll never forget, we're in the back room of this Gold's Gym Alexander. And this was a meathead. This was a lot of pros at this gym. Like I said, I'd get rattled off four or five of them. We're in the back. We're training legs. And I remember it was Don, Maria, Willie Stallings, this guy, Razor, my workout partner, Jack Smith, all these guys. And we're doing some kind of ridiculous ass drop sets, leg press, into hack squats, into extensions. Everybody's about to puke, right? And we're going at it, going at it, going at it. I'll never forget. I may have competed at that point, so I might have been 125 pounds, right? But you couldn't tell me that I wasn't a beast at 125 pounds. That's what I thought. And I remember getting up off the leg press, right? And I kind of did the Jay Cutler stomp with my quad. I did this across my legs. I hit it like that. And I'm feeling big. And I'll never forget. Jack Smith walks by me, pats me on the shoulder, and looks at me. And he goes, "They feel big, don't they?" Fucker. Really? Really? You're going to just, you know, right there. So, the guy, they were just awesome, though. They were awesome. So that, you know, but that got me into competing. Hey, Don, I want to compete. And they go, yeah. And, you know, it was, here's, Don would say, here's my pager number. You know, here's my pager. Page me if you need anything. But here's your diet. And once a week, you'd go in the locker room, you'd strip down, you'd hit four quarter turns. And he'd go, up your cardio a little bit, cut your carbs by 50, and keep doing what you're doing. Like, that was it. There was no, you know, all this, the stuff that goes on now. It's such a different, you know, such a different, it's a business now, you know, and then you were just kind of the weird guys in the gym. There was no, it wasn't a business to it. You know, nobody, you know, I laugh because everybody had on, anybody old school, remember the old T. Michael bodybuilding gear? It was T. Michael was the name of a company. It had this cartoon muscle dude with a hairdo, and he was on there, T. Michael bodybuilding gear. You'd wear your fanny pack into the gym, the baggy Zubaz pants, which my dumbass still wears every day. it was just, like I said, you were the weirdos in the gym, you know, back then.
I'm looking them up right now, and I definitely know those tendencies.
You'll see it. You know? See T. Michael bodybuilding gear.
I see them.
And it was all these like three-quarter cutoff shirts and stuff. Ah, dude, it was great. But, you know, and it's funny, you link that to now, and now that would be, you see everybody walking around with a Wolfpack bag or a six-pack bag, or, but the difference was then it was this tiny percentage. Now, it, you know, it's everybody. And, I remember having a conversation with Jay Cutler a couple years ago. I work his show. He has a show down in Virginia Beach, not Virginia Beach, in Richmond. I'm sorry. And we were down there and I was talking to him and I was like, Jay, what do you, you know, I followed you 96, 97, 98 early on where, you know, I said, I'm, you know, watched with Willie and at Nationals and Don Long and watched you guys compete. How different is it now versus what it was? Like, I don't think that people understand. You know, now there's bikini, there's men's fitness, there's physique, there's, I mean, all these things are great for the sport, but it's a different sport than what it was, you know, then. And he gives me the very politically correct answer. Oh, this is very good for the sport. You know, I'm glad everybody does it. It brings money in, which we all agree with. And I was like, yeah, I mean, people now don't understand like what you went through or what you go through as a top pro men's bodybuilder to get there. I'm like, just the food alone, the amount of food. Never again. He was telling a story, and one of his buddies was with him. He goes, dude, I remember being at the Dallas airport with you. It was the year. What year did they want he and Ronnie both to be over 300? Was that like 05, maybe 03? I'm trying to remember what year it was. One of the
was
big
it that
years.
Early?
And they wanted them both huge. And you know, Jay's not that tall. He's 5'7". And they said he was saying he was at the Dallas airport. It's like 5:30, 6 a.m. He's on his second meal already, and he's trying to down it. And as he would take a bite of chicken and a bite of rice and swallow it, it would come back up because he was so full and sick of eating again. And he's like, I'd have to sit there, swallow it again, and go at it. He was like, people don't understand. It was a full-time job just getting that much food in. I've heard him on some interviews talking about that, how hard it was, you know, for him to eat that much food and get there. So. Yeah, it was just a different world. And I love it now. I love being able to work the Olympia and work all the local shows and be part of it. I never thought that something, you know, going to the gym when I was 25, 26 and meeting these people, that 25 years later, I'd be a big part of the industry. And for me to be able to say, oh, yeah, I talked to Jay Cutler, I talked to Ronnie, or this weekend I saw so-and-so, or, hey, you know, Rami was backstage and this happened. It's crazy. You know, it's crazy. And Tony and I, so Tony's the head expediter. If you watch any NPC or any of the, like the Olympia, any of the national shows, Tony Roberts is the guy you'll see. He's the head expediter in a black suit, taking people on and off and lining them up. So he's there. And then myself and the other people are right off stage with a lining people up. What do you do? Get ready. Your tan look okay. Earrings out, you know, hair look, whatever it is. So we talk about that all the time. I'm like, dude, never would have thought this, you know, back 25 years ago when we were kind of in all of these guys that we'd be part of it. And it's just awesome. The people are all great. It's the knowledge that's out there, you know, is phenomenal. I used to tell Sophia, my fiance, I said, you know, the thing is, I don't know everything, but if I don't know something, I know somebody who does. You know, we might not be able to know what the answer is, but guess what? We can make a quick phone call and talk to the best in the world somewhere at something, you know, and yep. doing it. So, it was, you know, that's, I think, what kind of led me into being able to own the gym, you know, when I did, and I wanted that atmosphere and stuff when I had that. So it's been a heck of a journey.
In just the short amount of time that I've been in the fitness industry, it's changed significantly. I mean, yeah. I started in the gym when I was like 5 years old, and like not knowing what I was really doing, but with my dad going to the gym, like just kind of tagging me along, and then always seeing like my uncle had the animal posters all around the gym. And so I remember one day, I don't know, I was probably like 12 years old. He was like, go and read every single one of them. And until you finish reading all of them out loud, then you can start working out. You know, it was like, are you serious? He's like, no, like really, you're not allowed in here until you go around. And I was like, yeah. All right. So I went around, and like the amount of, like, I think what it taught me was just like, these guys are working harder than anybody else.
Yeah.
Like, you can see the photo and you're like, wow, that guy looks good. But then you talk about that's like that similar story of, I am shoveling down food in order to make weight. And I looked it up. It was 2004 when they went against each other. And it was, and I realized that this isn't just like, it is having a good time. It's like meeting, hanging out with the bros and having a good time, whatever. But you're also like, you're working towards something. There's a goal here of improvement, and I have the ability to take this into my own hands and do whatever I want with it.
Yeah.
But I need people around. And it was also that like my uncle was the strongest guy in the area, my dad, my uncle. And so like, let's go to these guys and see what they know.
Yeah.
And then after a certain amount of time, I was like,
that was the whole coaching. That was it. You go to the biggest guy in the gym and who you knew. And that's kind of where your information ended. Yeah.
Yeah. And once I got tired of my dad telling me, you got to breathe more, I was like, dad, shut the you know, I love you, but yeah. I just need a third party right now to tell me that I need to breathe more. And then we went to this gym called the Rat Pack, and it was in a like a storage unit, but a large storage unit, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Robert Jackson was the gentleman who owned the gym, and I got introduced to what strength really was. Like, these guys are out there deadlifting 800 pounds, like squatting 500-600 or benching 500-600 pounds, squatting 8. And I'm like, wait, you can get that strong? Like, this is a real thing. Like, how do you do it? And it was like, coaches now, you're right. They charge a lot of money, and part of me understands why. And I being in the coaching industry and the nutrition place, get it, right? There's a lot of knowledge to support that. And so I get it, but he charged me nothing. He told me I needed to clean the gym when I was there, and that was about it. And I would clean up everything I could, put the weights away. And it's like, how much are you charging me for training? He's like, nothing. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And it's like, this guy is training like Team USA athletes, and he just is giving me free information. It's like,
that's Robert, what it like, was. Yeah.
I'm going to pay you, dude. Like, I don't care what it is. Like, if it's $25, I'm going to pay you something.
Yeah.
I'm never like, please, Lord, let me just help the gym and help you.
It was just such a different world. And it's not better or worse. It's just different. You know, I'm thrilled that there's so many people that can make money off the industry and that it's normalized and all that. But yeah, I didn't pay Don Long. You know what I did? I supported him. I'd buy his t-shirts. I'd root for him. And he was just the nicest guy in the world. He'd see my mom in the grocery store. My mom would come home. I saw your friend Don today. Oh my goodness. He's so big, you know, and he was just the nicest guy in the world. But he put this diet together, you know, write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to you. And I'd send him text him or page him. You know, and I'm sure his pager would go off and he was probably like, oh God, here he's, you know, and I, you know, go to a payphone and call me back. And it was just, you know, it was a different world. And I have clients now. I do have a company. I do a lot of keto, so I run try and teach people, not just from a competition standpoint, but just in general, how you can be on a diet and not have to eat a bunch of plain chicken and dry brown rice. There's so many different ways. You know, Sophia and I started this company, ooh, 5 or 6 years ago, trying to prove to everybody, because keto was getting big. You know, people were talking about it. And I was like, ugh, low carb. We've all done low carb. Low carb sucks balls. You're tired, you're grumpy, you don't have any energy. Let's do this and prove some people wrong, right? And we tried it, and we were about 15 days into it, and we were miserable. Strength sucked, looked like shit, didn't feel good. She had a headache, and we were about ready to quit and give up on it. And I met a guy on a chat room somewhere, and he was a scientist at National Institute of Health. And he was talking about this low carb, high fat diet, and I was talking back and forth to him. And he says, if I could spend some time with you and show you how a low carb, he said, we don't call it keto because we're doctors and scientists. Keto is not what it is. This diet's been around since the early 1900s. We use it for kids with epilepsy. We use it for different types of cancers. Like, there's a lot of medical uses for it. But if I could show you where this diet is about 90% muscle sparing versus a typical diet at a 20% caloric deficit, it's only about 65%. Would you be interested? I was like, dude, that's the holy grail. Hell yeah. And I started working with him, and he knew nothing about bodybuilding. So we kind of put together a whole plan, and Sophia and I would mix and match and try, and now that's what I do. So I have those, you know, I have those clients through KellyKirk.net, through one of my companies. And then I tell the kids at school, because I teach high school nutrition, and I tell them all the time, I'm like, look, what I teach you now, 5 years from now, we might not have, we're totally wrong on. You know, I look at the stuff that we used to tell people, or like our coaches back then, the big guy in the gym would tell you know what? As soon as you get done training, you've got a 45-minute anabolic window. That was the big thing. You got to get your protein in immediately. Well, no, you don't. Your muscle protein synthesis happens for about 24 hours. mTOR is the process which kicks it off. It lasts for about 24 hours after you break it down. So as long as you get your protein in, it doesn't matter when. You know, we used to tell everybody, you got to eat 6 or 7 small meals because that'll increase your metabolism. That sounds great. It's probably 100 studies now that prove absolutely not. It doesn't make any difference. You can synthesize and take as much protein as you want relatively if you're a trained athlete, and you don't have to break it into 6 or 7 meals. And it actually doesn't spike your metabolism. It actually stops your fat burning, because every time you eat, no matter what you eat, you spike insulin, and you physically cannot have insulin raised and fat burning going on at the same time. So actually 6 or 7 times a day, you're putting the brakes on fat burning. And I'm like, damn, I've been doing that for 20 years. And, you know, now the science is a little bit different. So it's just, you know, it's fun. And that's when you talk about coaches, there's good ones and bad ones, you know. And it's the good ones, it's nice when you talk to somebody that gets it, or somebody that wants to learn. I've been doing this for I don't know how many years, 30 some years. And every time I talk to somebody, I learn something, whether it's a pro athlete, whether it's, you know, one of the pro athletes' trainers, whether it's something I read. I love learning and trying new stuff. And I like to be able to prove myself wrong and go, I'll be damned. Did that wrong for 20 years. Let's do it this way again, you know. And I don't think everybody's like that, but I tell my clients that same thing. I'm like, we're gonna try this, and maybe it doesn't work. Let's if it doesn't, we'll switch it around, we'll change it, that kind of thing. So yeah,
I think
it's fun.
a good coach is somebody that can see the data and then make an adjustment. You know, like I might be able to have an individual client follow a specific I think our traditional like triphasic periodization program, whenever I'm running training for somebody, I can go hypertrophy, then strength, and then power. And then I think I can have 4 weeks, and then 2 weeks. But then if somebody at the end of the day is like in the middle of a strength cycle and they're not feeling the best, it's like, okay, well, how about we cut it short? We have a deload week, and then we skip our power phase, and then we come back into a little bit more hypertrophy, but a low, like a pretty low intensity, like right about a 7 out of 8, like maybe a 70% kind of range, or a 7 RPE kind of idea for a couple of weeks. mitigate the pain, mitigate the overall fatigue, and then let's go to start resetting again.
Yeah.
Not always sticking by the idea of the book, because science is a beautiful thing. I think it's very helpful. It teaches us a lot of things, but humans are just so different in the way that, like, there's a lot of things going on in their lives, and like, you have to understand that. I think for professional athletes, you have a certain mentality. And then for, especially I think in your position, I think teaching nutrition, I wish that I would have had one, a nutrition class when I was in high school, but also a nutrition class from somebody in your space, like someone who has lived and seen the extremes.
Yeah.
Because I think the person who's lived the extreme understands how to not necessarily dumb it down, but make it simple and digestible for an individual to say, this is what I can use to carry for the rest of my life. And like, the impact that you make is insane.
I tell these kids, I said, you know, and my class is not hard. I tell everybody in the beginning, I'm like, look, this class is not difficult. If you do the work, I am going to make sure you learn what I need you to learn. I don't care whether you learn it and you get a, you know, an A or B on your test because it's written, if it's verbal, if you do a project, I just want you to know the information. And I said, I understand math is important, history is important, you have to have all those classes. But guess what? 20 years from now, you're not going to be a job interview and somebody's not going to ask you who won the War of 1812. Nobody gives a damn. But 20 years from now, you damn sure better know how to improve your immune system, you know, what you need to take to be able to lose weight, gain weight. We talk a lot about nutritional therapy and vitamins and holistic stuff. And what do you take? How do you boot that kind of stuff? So it's a life class, is literally what I said. You're always going to be able to have that, you know. What you get with a lot of the coaches, like a lot of the local coaches, is they will see something online and they'll see a top coach given, you know, doing something with an Olympian. Well, if it works for him, it's got to work for me. Now, back in the day, that just was from a magazine. I'd look at that and go, ooh, BCAAs? What the hell is that? I need 1,000 of these because there's a, you know, because Rich Gaspari's selling it in Flex Magazine or whatever the hell it was, you know, Dorian Yates had it. So that was kind of what we had. Now, the new generation coming through has social media and they, you know, they watch this. Backstage, I see so much crap. And I say that with a smile on my face because you're backstage and, you know, bikini is completely different, obviously, than bodybuilding. These girls are not supposed to come out with striations. Like, they're very specific. And yet backstage, the bikini girls are pumping up twice as hard as the bodybuilders. And I'm like, girls, you got on a crown, a bikini, 6-inch heels, and you're back here with bands, you know. Stop. That's not what they're looking for. But it's just what they've seen and what they've heard. 2 years ago, there was this rash of everybody backstage had Cool Ranch Doritos. And literally, like, halfway through the season, I'm like, why the fuck are there so many bags of Doritos backstage? What is this bullshit, right? And you'd see one of these local coaches, and they'd be over there with a guy, girl, whoever it was, standing backstage. They'd have a coach's pass and they're looking at them. Now, we're in line. You're on stage in 5 minutes, you know, 10 minutes, right? Not a whole lot you're going to change in that last 5 or 10 minutes. The coach would be looking at them and go, all right, open your mouth and take like one Dorito. You want a Dorito? What is it? Fucking change in that 30 seconds of eating that Dorito? Like, what the?
What the fuck? That's so weird.
But they're justifying, you know, the $2,000 they just charged your ass and to be backstage. And, you know, competitors, let me now get two gummy bears. And now I understand the concept behind it, the sodium, you know, the salt and the sodium.
Yeah.
But stop eating one freaking, you know, Dorito backstage. So fast forward to the Olympia. It was the year of COVID. And Olympia was down in Orlando. And we were at pre-judging, and it was the 212. I think it was Derek Lunsford. I got to remember. It was Haney coach Derek. Haney ran by the coaches Derek, I think, right? So Haney comes in, and he sticks his head in the curtain. And I'm backstage. Coaches aren't allowed backstage at the pro shows. They're not there. Sticks his head back, and he goes, Kelly, to me. I go, hey. He goes, come here. And he goes, go grab Derek for me. And I was like, let me go get him. So I run over and say, Derek, coach wants you real quick. So bring him over to the edge. And again, he's like 10, 15 minutes before going on stage, right? And Haney looks at him. He goes, all right, here. And he pops open a bag of Cool Ranch Doritos. And this was before, this was after I had seen all this, right? And he starts giving him a couple. Now, you're the best in the world and you're at 3% body fat. And you know what? It's probably going to do something. You're going to see that little bit of sodium, you know, that quick, or that little bit of fat or whatever it is, probably makes. And the thing is also at that level, if you're here and you could take it from here to here, that might be the difference between Olympia and not Olympia. So yeah. I understand it with him, but I see this and I go, you have got to be shitting me. And he goes, what? I go, you're the freaking reason why all these assholes are backstage at every show feeding their kids, you know, bags of Doritos backstage when it's not making any difference for them. I said, I get it with you. So, and, you know, Derek went on to kick ass at that show anyway. So it was, but, you know, I think everybody sees this and they think, well, it works for him and he's the best. It's got to work for me. Well, there's a pretty big stretch from, you know, you're from Derek to a local bikini competitor. You know, it's weird. So I see a lot of that stuff and I laugh. And again, I'm super supportive. I love all the people being backstage and doing all that. But you see stuff where you're just like, oh my goodness. So it's pretty funny.
In powerlifting, it was honey for a while there.
Yeah.
And I still think it kind of is around, but not nearly as often. Right now, there's a huge craze of like the, which I mean, I was definitely that guy who had like a bunch of, like Sour Patch Kids, right?
Yeah.
You're looking for simple sugar. Again, right. trying to, you know, ultimately increase my overall glycogen as fast as I can.
Yep, absolutely.
It makes sense, especially again, I was competing on the world stage.
Big time, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's doing this, right?
Yep.
And so, except for, I think it was like, I forget what country. I think they were like the Romanians or something like that. They were outside between squats going out and smoking cigarettes. It was the wildest thing. It was like first time.
Hell?
It was crazy. But like, if we think about what, like, I'm going to have it. Yeah, I understand it gets the simple sugar. But if I use specifically a honey, mm-hmm. there's a pretty sharp decline. And it kind of puts me to sleep to some degree, right?
Yeah.
I forgot exactly what it is inside the honey, but it can make me very fatigued. And if I'm lifting for 6 hours, then yes, it helps me for the immediate.
Yeah.
Maybe for the next lift or two lifts. But by the time I get to my deadlifts, I'm like, man, why am I just so tired? I don't know. You've had honey for the last 4 or 5 hours. Like, is this like,
yeah.
Combine that with maybe some more complex carbs, and I get it.
Yeah.
Or a different carb.
Right.
But yeah, it was like,
this we used to carb up with, back in the late 90s, early 2000s, pie filling. I'd go to,
really?
You know, the grocery store and buy like 6 big cans of pumpkin and cherry and peach pie filling.
Wow.
And you know, you've been on a diet for 12, 16 weeks, whatever it was. That pie filling was the freaking best ever. And you're just housing it. Shit's all running down your face and you're eating it, crushing it. Pie filling, you know, and now you got carbolics and so much other stuff and different, but it's amazing to me. It's really pretty neat when you go back and you look at like Arnold and them back in the late 60s, early 70s, when nobody knew anything about anything and they were able to achieve the level they did. I mean, we're so far ahead of themselves. I think the fitness industry is always, I don't know, 10, 15 years ahead of the general public in kind of everything. And some of it might not stick and maybe falls out, but the thinking of it is almost always, you know, I think 10 or 15 years ahead of where everybody yeah. else is. You know, the crap that we're taking now and looking at and reading 15 years from now, somebody else is going to go, oh, well, yeah, that's kind of mainstream. You know, I think we're always,
right.
As an athlete, you're always looking for that next edge. You're always looking for how you're going to push yourself over and make a difference, you know, versus the next guy.
Can I take some cranberry powder or, you know, some spirulina, or what can I do to make sure that everything inside here is as healthy as it can be? It's
yeah.
definitely like any edge you can get, especially when you're starting to, I mean, even at the local level, obviously like
oh, yeah.
the Doritos craze, it still bleeds in.
Yeah.
But I think at the very top of that, you have these guys that are like at the very peak, the peak performing athletes that have like these weird rituals that, like cupping, like everybody started to see, what's his name? Phillips start doing cupping.
Yeah.
And everyone was like, well, shit, I guess I'm going to do cupping now. And
yeah.
like, it like blew up. Right. So,
yep. Have you ever had that done?
I have. And I've done it before. I used to have my own like set. So I would do it to other people.
Yeah.
And what
I've heard, you can really feel a difference with it pulling, you know, like pulling the fashion stuff, I guess, apart from it.
some people do and some people don't. Like, sometimes it's just bruising, right? Sometimes people are just like, oh, this is uncomfortable. I don't like it. And then other times, and me personally, there's times where I'm like, man, I feel no difference whatsoever. And then other times where I put it maybe around like my knee doesn't feel the best after squats. I put it on my calf, maybe on the quad and the hamstring, and my knee feels great afterwards. And so
that's cool.
Like, okay. So like it can definitely, I think it has a place for sure.
Yeah. So I used, before Masters Nationals in July, about 6 weeks out, Maria Callow that I talked about before, she's still a friend of mine. She's, like I said, one of the top female bodybuilders ever. And she does massage therapy. And she was telling me that the lines, I had striations in my quads, but the lines weren't deep. The three heads just weren't separated. And she's feeling it. She's like, you've got too much fascia. She's like, there's 20 years of this fascia built up over, you know, here's the cut. And the fascia kind of comes over it. She's like, we got to get rid of that. We got to start scraping it. So she has these metal torture tools, the fascia tools. And I was kind of thinking in my head, this is some bullshit. This is no, literally one session. Now, it hurt like hell. And then I got up and I go, what the hell? My lines are deeper. Are you kidding me? And she's like, yeah, wait till we do this 2 times a week for the next. And it blew me away how much of a difference it made. Use, actually, I don't know if you see that hanging on the door. I have a low-level laser infrared there. And that thing's $1,200, $1,300. Phenomenal. I'll use it. I don't use it as much as I should. I actually bought it about 5 years ago. I had surgery, and I had heard that it was really good for wound healing. 28 NFL teams use it. They have one on the ISS, on the space station. There's all this, you know, science behind it, that it brings the red blood cells in, the infrared does, and the low-level laser helps heal and blah, blah. It's phenomenal. I'll do it if I tweak something on my back. It's good for your skin. So when I'm in prep, I do it on my stomach to try and tighten up, you know, my skin. Nice. Same thing on my glutes. And I'll spend 20 minutes, sometimes 20 minutes twice a day, you know, morning and night. And it's phenomenal. And it's just
cool.
I love that kind of stuff. Anything, like you said, like the fascia, the cupping, anything you can find that's going to give you that extra little oomph. And especially if there's some science behind it, somewhere to back it up, you know.
Yeah.
Love that.
I started doing a lot of infrared saunas. And mm-hmm. So I bought one for the house. Figured, you know, like there's a lot of research behind the saunas that we traditionally know, like the indirect heat, right?
Yeah.
So like the room gets hot, and then not necessarily there's direct waves coming at me, but the atmosphere becomes warm. That's where most of the research is done, but it was enough. And it's like, I can't really like buy one of those and put it in my house. So I ended up getting an infrared sauna, which also has a lot of hair, skin, nails. You can sit in it longer. It still has the same idea with the effect on the heat shock proteins. And so I was like, this is good enough for me. Like, this is great. And then I think like mentally it made me feel good. It's supposed to be good for decreasing the risk of Alzheimer's, mm-hmm. decreasing inflammation, decreasing chances for cardiovascular health or cardiovascular attacks or mm-hmm. Cardiovascular disease. And I was like, oh my God, like this is it. And so like, I think it's definitely very much so in our industry wherever like anything we can get, it's always healthy. It's like, yeah, these guys are weird, but it's become definitely more of a normal. And when I was in high school, I was like, I was the weird kid because I was the one that wanted to like work out all the time.
Yeah,
and part of me internally maybe was projecting that onto other people. Like they just saw me as this weird guy, but not everyone was into it that much. And then it became like, I saw everybody leave high school and start looking around. It's like, and now everyone's working out. Like, why is it like, why was I weird when you're in high school? Yeah. Now everyone's like trying to stay fit. You know?
There's a meme that I see that makes me laugh and it makes me think about that. It's, Vince McMahon from the WWE walking in, you know, he walks in all cocky and it shows him walking in and it says, this is me walking into work every morning, knowing that I bench press more than everybody here. So fuck them, I'm in charge. And I'm like, yep, that's me every day walking in there. Like nobody else gives a shit but me, but I walk in there going, whatever, I bench more than you, definitely squat more than you. We definitely live in our own world with that shit. Now, have you jumped on the trend of, getting up in the morning and throwing yourself in an ice bath? Because every morning for the last like 2 months, I log on to Instagram and the first thing I see is a bunch of dudes and a couple hot asses jumping in ice baths.
It's the thing.
And it's good stuff. And there's a lot of science behind it. But I'm also like, all right, I don't need to see y'all jumping in the dam. Like, just tell me you're doing it. But it's literally, and they're making millions off the a little tub now that you can buy. Oh, I'm like, yep. How did I miss that? That's where you should have jumped on, a freaking collapsible tub, and they throw water and ice in it and jump in it. Brilliant. Brilliant.
It is brilliant. I've gotten into it a little bit again because of, I think a lot of times, and I
rehab is fantastic for, right?
It is fantastic for, and I really use it for I think there's a lot to say for like the mental fortitude that it takes to be able to do it, right?
Yeah, I agree.
I think part of it also, like, I am definitely of the addictive nature. Like, I think a lot of people in fitness become addicted to growth, to development, to other substances. Oh, like,
we're all batshit protein, crazy.
Creatine. Dude, it's great. Like, caffeine, anything we can get is like, it's a good another hit. And so I definitely struggle with using, abusing other things in my life.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So I was like, I'm definitely going to use this as my ability to like still get my dopamine response. Cause I learned that it can provide like a 6 to 8 times increase in dopamine
for
about 6 to 8 hours. And so
testosterone levels, all kinds of stuff go through the roof on it. It's supposed to be good. It just cracks me up because that's literally the new trend. What, the last, I don't know, 6, 8 weeks, all of a sudden I'm like, why the fuck am I seeing so much of this in the morning? When I literally first thing in the morning, I log on, I'm like, Susie, Billy, and John all been in the tub already. You know, I'm seeing that. So it's funny, but I think anybody that is in bodybuilding, powerlifting, just into the gym every day, yeah, there's something wrong with all of us, you know. And I laugh because I tell I preach to the kids at school, you know, you want to be healthy and blah. But I also will tell them, I'm like, all right, who goes to gym because you want to be healthy? And everybody, I go, who goes to gym because you want to have a big biceps or look good on the beach? Or that's what we all start going for. I'm like, don't even call bullshit. We all want to look good, you know, with our shirt off or at the beach or whatever it is. And guys, I laugh because we used to, back in the early, I was running 3 gold gyms. I was a regional corporate director of 3 gold gyms in DC. My buddies and I, we would all go out and we'd go to clubs and bounce around and see all these different people. And whether the night was good or not, you could walk into some place. And if you walked in and there were dudes that would come up to me like, oh, dude, God damn, you're big as shit. Bro, you look good. I was like, oh, yeah, those 5 dudes over there just told me I was jacked. I'm done. We're good. Like to go home. I feel pretty good. It's funny because girls don't give a shit. I don't think, other than Sophia, and she was into the sport. I don't think anybody I've ever dated or been with gave 2 shits whether I worked out, had a dad bod, had no bod or not. We do it out of an ego thing, you know, for our own self. Yeah. So it's funny that we say that, and most girls, you know, really, really don't care. But there's definitely something wrong with all of us that do this. It's an addictive personality, and I don't want to say destructive, but we're all definitely too hard on ourselves. You know, it's funny because, you know, I'll go into the gym and I don't lift as heavy as I did, but I still ego lift, you know, it still gets the best of me. But I'll look at myself, you know, and I took 2nd in Masters Nationals. I'm top, you know, I'm hoping to pull a pro card in the next year. So I'm going to fairly top level of what I do, but definitely a top level of the average person in the world. But I walk around, you walk around Walmart or whatever, and I'm like, nobody can even tell that I lift because I got a t-shirt on or a big sweatshirt or whatever. I look completely different than 99.9% of these people do. You know, the kids will ask something about bench pressing or whatever. And I was telling one of the kids the other day, I saw a thing, 91% of the males 18 and over in this country cannot bench press their own weight.
Wow.
And I'm like, what's the average guy weigh? 180? Probably. I don't know. I mean,
ish.
And fucking 91% of the country can't bench press their own weight. Like, that's not even a thing for us, you know.
Wait,
that was when I was 17 or something, you know, whatever. But it's crazy how we think, because you think in your head, man, I'm not big enough. Oh, I missed that lift. I suck. Well, no, you're still the top 1% of 1% of 1%, you know, that's out there. It's just crazy. And I tell people all the time, I was like, if you ever start to feel bad about yourself, go to Walmart or go to an amusement park and walk around, and you'll be like, no, I'm definitely doing pretty good. I'm okay. You'll see a lot of that, but yeah, we're, we're all batshit crazy. If you're into it, you're definitely batshit crazy. There's something wrong with all of us.
You know, there's times like just recently, I finally started lifting a little bit more aggressively. And after being retired for a little while, I competed at Worlds in 2017 took some time off from powerlifting. And so got a couple golds, got a silver, and then like, I was like, okay, I'm going to step off and just kind of figure out what I was going to do in the world of fitness and health. Mm-hmm. And then recently started to get, I deadlifted 555 for a set of three or five sets of three. Still, I will say that out loud, and somebody or like people are watching and they're like, God damn, and they're like, that's pretty great. Or I'll tell my girl, and she's like, you know, you're doing really well. And I'm like, man, dude, but I was deadlifting like 750, like a couple years. So this is still not
right.
Right. And so like, but is it generally good? Yes. But is it where I think I could be or where I think I should be? No.
Right.
Right. And
a disappointment. But to 99% of the people, they're like, holy shit, that dude's strong as hell. We're crazy.
I think people who are at the very top, they learn to kind of harness that energy and then put it towards to educating and be like educating. You've gone through experience. You understand what it is to be to some degree having some body dysmorphia or self-deprecating, and then can educate others on how not to go through that.
Yeah.
And then also that level of desire of improvement, I think, translates into our professional lives so well.
Yeah.
And like the way you teach your kids is probably better than most nutrition coaches or nutrition teachers or teachers in general.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, I think people who are in the fitness industry or like who involve fitness into their lives are just better and higher performing individuals overall. Like, you're not looking at Jay Cutler and like, he's not just like slacking off in one part of his life. I'd imagine that there's a lot of his life that is tuned in. Like, his sleep is probably, you know, like he's paying attention to all the details that make ultimately his life the best possible life that it could be. That's in business, that's in relationships. I think some areas suffer. Like, I think especially during around competitions, relationships are hard. It's like, but there's still like a focus on the success and the goal.
Yeah. And that's funny because that's exactly. So I need to take a kind of minute and explain to you, Sophia, my fiance. But what I do with her foundation and through John Maxwell is literally exactly what you're talking about, is taking everything through a fitness lens, but taking it to a business, taking it to a sales rep, taking it to a CEO, you know, taking it to somebody who is getting off drugs, who's thinking about committing suicide. It doesn't have to be, we have it in our mind that it's, I got to squat more, deadlift more, bench press more, but it's that same mindset that translates, you know, into everything. So, and that's kind of how I ended up where I am right now. And really the message that I'm trying to get out there to everybody. I opened Powerhouse Gym in 2017 with my two best friends. We had wanted to own a gym forever. We put all of our money together, got all of our time together, thought this was going to be it. We're going to be millionaires. Long story short on that, the gym business was a hell of a lot harder than the three of us thought. And the three of us had a falling out in, 2013, maybe 12, something like that. I walked away from the gym. They ended up losing it. I came back in and took it over myself. And changed the gym around. It was a hardcore meathead gym. We had three big bay doors, 3,000 square feet of turf that we actually bought. It was the football field from James Madison University. We went down and picked it up and brought it back up here. And this was before anybody was doing any of this stuff. You know, all that stuff's pretty common now. You would walk in, music was blasting. It was loud. It was just, you know, we talked earlier before we started, you could walk into that gym and it didn't matter how bad your day was, what you felt like. As soon as you walked in, you went, all right, I'm ready to get it. Let me get a pre-workout. What do I got to do? Music's right. It didn't even have to be good music. It was just loud. It was just an atmosphere. Everybody in there was an athlete. And I used to tell everybody, being an athlete doesn't mean you got to bench press more than this guy, or you got to run the 40 and 4.2 or whatever it is. I said, see that guy over there? It was an 89-year-old Navy, retired Navy vet. I said, he's an athlete. I said, because of here. He walked in this gym 7 months ago, and he said, all I want to do is be able to get to where I can walk up and down the stairs. He's here twice a day, 6 days a week, busts his ass, works with a trainer, nutritionist, you name it. And now he runs up and down the stairs. That's an athlete. It's a mentality. Oh, it's not a what you're doing in the gym kind of thing. And that's what Powerhouse was, is it was you had an athlete's mentality. It was an athlete's gym. So struggled with the gym. Had been in and out of a billion one relationships that half of them I fucked up, half of them they fucked up, just a hot mess. And towards the end of the gym, I came back from a shift, and the guy at my front desk says, hey, there was a girl here to sign up earlier. And I said, oh, did you sign her up? No, she said she wanted to sign up with you. And I said, okay, why? I don't know. I said, okay. Well, about 3 hours later, this tiny little firecracker, 4'10", comes walking in. And she's like, hi, I'm Sophia. I wanted to get a tour of the gym and want to join. I said, oh, okay. What are you looking to do? Well, I really want to get into competing. And I did a show when I was in college or just out of college. I can't remember now. And I really wanted to be part of it and heard this was the right gym to go to. So I walk around, I'm showing her stuff. And of course, in retrospect, I look and I'm trying to work it, right? I'm like, oh, this is the best leg press and blah. She already knew all that shit and she was acting dumb. Oh, really? She was working it. So fast forward, I now know she actually came in there because she had seen me at a local bodybuilding show where I was expediting and she wanted to get to know me and come in. So she played me, which makes me laugh. That's good. So her and I started dating, and about 6 months into us dating, I lost the gym. Had to close it up, lost all the equipment in it. I just couldn't keep it open. It was a bad lease, bad landlords, bad business decisions left over from the two previous owners, bad decisions on my end. It was just piss poor all the way around. And the owner of Powerhouse Corporate finally told me one day, he's like, Kelly, let it go. He's like, you're not the first person to lose a business. You're not the last. You know, you didn't do anything deceitful or wrong. Walk away. If you want another one in the future, I'll help you get one. But now this isn't the one. So I let it go. And when I let it go, I lost everything. I lost my house. I lost literally everything I owned. And I ended up living in my car at a rest stop on 95 South for about 3 months. And Sophia and I were dating. She was renting a room from a family, so wasn't allowed to have anybody come over, you know, and that. So when the gym closed and I was living in my car, I lied to everybody. I lied to my family. I lied to my friends. Hey, what are you doing? Oh, I'm working over here doing such and such. Where are you living? Oh, I'm staying with a friend. I'm staying with my family. I lied to everybody. The only person that knew anything was Sophia. And she didn't care. She supported me 1,000%. Baby, you're going to get through this. I know you are. What do you want to do? You can do this. You know, she was all about it. And a couple months into this mess, a guy that I had worked with and a friend of mine owns a Gold's Gym 20 minutes away. I contacted him. I said, Bob, I want to see about getting a membership. And he goes, yeah. He said, sorry to hear about everything that happened with you losing Powerhouse and all. He said, I know you're going through a tough time. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I will give you a membership free for you and your girlfriend if you promise me you will be in here working out every day. I said, dude, you give me a membership, I'll be in there tomorrow. I was 226 pounds. I'm about 182 right now, and I compete at 154. So I was 75 pounds heavier than I would be walking on stage. Wow. Went home, told Sophia, I went to her house, told her, and she's like, let's go. 4:30 the next morning, her and I got up. We walked in the gym, and we started training together. And little by little by little, over the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months, my physical got better. And I'll be damned, as my physical got better, my mental got better. There were times where I was living in my car. I was done. I mean, I was done. I was, how do I end this? I'm done. I failed at everything. I've let everybody down. This is not the life I want to live. I had $42 to my name, and I went to Walmart the first week, and I was like, all right, how do I get my macros out of $42? Tuna, rice, like fucking Spam, a bunch of nasty shit. And that was it. That was my $42. I was working odd jobs off of Craigslist. It was miserable. And she didn't care. Didn't give a shit. You're going to make it. This is what you do. Started substituting at high school. And fast forward a year, and this year and a half into substituting, they offered me a job. You know what? We got a nutrition job. How about this? So I did what I had to do there. She was so proud of me for getting my nutrition job. And she got into competing. So when we first started, when she first started competing, the first show that I coached her with, she wanted me to kind of be her coach and run her through it, was a local show here. And we show up to check-ins, and you know, they have the little numbers to wear on your bikini. And we walk in, and her number was 222. Okay. She gets 222. I guess I should back up, but I'll come back. Well, she gets 222. She goes on, she wins the show. She wins the overall. I'm still living in my car at this point. A friend of ours, her apartment had flooded, or condo had flooded, and they put her in a hotel, two-room hotel. She's like, why don't you come stay in the hotel with me? And I was like, hell yeah, that's better than sleeping in my car. Let me do that. So I'm staying with her. The first night, Sophia is coming over to visit the two of us. She texts me, hey, I'm on my way over to see you and Sherry. And I said, great. I said, we're in room 222. Just come on up. And she writes me back and she says, 222, is that on the first floor? No, it's not on the fucking first floor. 222 is on the second floor. So we ragged on her and made fun of her so bad. But again, 222, 222 was her number. Fast forward, I don't know, 8 months later, we're at Junior USA's down in South Carolina. There's 1,300 competitors. She goes in. 222 is her number. She wins first place in women's physique, first place in figure. Boom. Again. So 222 was kind of that number that just kept coming back for us, right? 3 years ago this weekend, I hadn't competed in 19 years. And 3 years ago, I went back and did Masters Nationals in Orlando. And the reason for that was 9 weeks before that, she kept pushing me. She's like, baby, why don't you get on stage? You should get on stage. Now, she's top level national competitor this far from her pro card, you know, has had, I don't know how many first and second places at national shows at this point. I said, babe, I don't want to do that. I don't have any desire. I don't need some third place trophy out of eight that does nothing for me, you know. She goes, well, when we go to this posing seminar, why don't you let everybody take a look at you and see what you think? And I said, all right. So I stripped down at the end of for Gary Udit, who's the head of the NPC on this side, and a good buddy of mine that I've known for 30 years. And they looked at me and they go, dude, you could do this. And I said, yeah, but do it or do it like up here. No, no, no. Get your ass out there and get your pro card. I said, all right. So I put my mind to it. 8 weeks later, took second. First time in 19 years I'd been on stage. So I was like, okay, you know what? At least I belong here. I knew it. And Sophia was so happy, so proud of me. Fast forward two more years. We've started this nutrition business. I'm teaching nutrition. She's getting her IFBB pro card. The gym was gone. You know, we were kind of past all that, but we were rebuilding. We were both working with the NPC, IFBB, doing all this cool stuff and really building an empire. And I've been through some shit, even, you know, the past 14 years before all the bad stuff happened, losing the gym. I had a nephew and niece. They were 11 and 12 years old, my brother's kids, and they were murdered. They were shot in the head and murdered at 11 and 12 years old. So I dealt with that when we first opened the gym. My mom passed away 6 months after that. My dad had a stage 4 brain tumor 30 days later. I just had this dump of death in about 18 months, you know, and I was telling somebody on another podcast, we were talking about the gym environment when bad stuff goes on. And it's amazing the people that are there. When my nephew and niece got murdered, the gym people just stepped up. I mean, they just took care of me. We're at the funeral. It was 3,000 people at the kid's funeral. It was just, you know, it was amazing. So I had been through some crap and I finally felt like, you know, Sophia ended up was putting my life for a reason. She's here. We're building something. Everything's going good. I'm going to have a pro card. She is. We're going to have this business. Things are just going great. And 2 years ago on July, she went to bed on a Friday night. We were supposed to work a show the next day and she didn't wake up. And she had a heart attack in her sleep and passed away. Young, healthy, no issues, no anything, you know, hadn't been sick. And, you know, still don't necessarily know what it, you know, what it was and probably never will. And at this point, it kind of doesn't matter. It is, you know, there's nothing I can do. But to say that rocked my world is an understatement. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. Obviously, continued teaching. I went right back to work. Still around the IFBB, the NPC, the Olympia that year. You talk about pro athletes being amazing. So Sophia and Sid Gillian had posed together, had done posing sessions together. I get there. So I've met Sid Gillian and her mom. She's four-time Miss Olympia at this point. Bawling my eyes out, hugging her mom. I mean, how cool is that? That there's, you know, these, you're the best in the world at what you do. And you give two shits about some nobody from Virginia because his girlfriend died. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, people don't have to be that way. And it was awesome to see these people. Hunter Labrada, same way, his family. Andrea Shaw, Miss Olympia. Just people were amazing. I'm backstage. I have the center O. So I have all the top Olympians. I have Rami. I have Bumstead, Andrea, and Sid. I've never forget. Wow. Sid is literally backstage and she's getting ready to go on finals, you know, the live broadcast, and she's getting ready to go out for her, for the finals routine. And she's standing there and she's got her hand on me. I'm supposed to be getting her ready. She's got her hand on me and she's talking to me and she's going, I know she's with me. I know she's here. We're going to go do this for her. Like, it's, she goes out there, kicks ass, wins the whole thing. They give her her big, you know, paper check. Her crown, she comes right off, gives me a hug, is crying. I'm crying. She's like, I know Sophia was with me. I could feel her out there. Like, dude, these athletes are amazing. You just don't have to be that way. You know, she's helped me out with fundraising. Hunter LeBron has done the same thing. Like, they've just been amazing. So anyway, that was, you know, all that happened in July. I didn't know where I was going to go, what I was going to do. And fast forward to that Thanksgiving. And I'm sitting with a friend of mine and he says, well, you know, what do you want to do? And I said, I don't know. I said, I want to do something to honor her, but I want to do for other people what she did for me. And he said, well, what's that? And I said, well, she saved my life. I said, she believed in me when I didn't believe in myself. She believed in me when I didn't think anybody else could. I went from living in a mansion to living in my car. I went from having a gym to literally owning nothing. I lost everything. And she didn't care. I was fat, out of shape, old, looked like crap, and she didn't care. She believed in me. And I want to be able to teach that, you know, to other people. So I started 222 Muscle, the Sophia Graham Foundation. And what we do is we raise money to provide anybody going through a trauma or tragedy, a gym membership, where that gym membership might actually save their life. And our mission statement is to lift people who feel the weight of the world on their shoulders and provide improved mental health through the pursuit of physical strength. And that's the primary thing that we do. Now, since then, I've also gotten certified through John Maxwell, and now I have stretched that into going into companies and walking into a business and saying, okay, how do we make you grow? I like to say growth when you didn't think it was possible. And you and I think growth. We think, how do I get an inch on my bicep? How do I get 5 pounds on my deadlift? But growth means so much more, especially in this day and age with all the mental health focus and everything that's going on. Growth might be getting yourself out of depression. Growth might be increasing your sales this month. Growth might be, you know, taking your podcast to a next level, getting it, you know, nationally recognized. It might be, it could be anything. And we all get stuck so easily in what's in our head. We hear so much noise in our head that I think sometimes we can't get past that noise to even, you know, get there and believe in ourselves. And sometimes it takes somebody else believing in us. And sometimes it just takes the right thing to click. I think as athletes, we're probably a little bit different because we're a little crazy anyway, and we're always looking for that edge. But I don't think that exists with the regular population out there. You know, it's different. So that, this is what I hope my life's calling, I guess, whatever it is, it will be. It's been not even two and a half years since I lost her. I cry every single day. Don't care who knows it. Don't care who sees it. Sometimes it's in the middle of the gym. I'll be getting ready for a set and something will happen and I'll just lose it. Yeah, it's been in the middle of class. It might be in the grocery store getting ice cream and I'll see her favorite brand and it'll hit, you know. I see stuff from her and I feel her all the time. I tell everybody, I don't care what somebody believes in or what religion you are or what you think about that. I was never a big believer in a lot of that stuff. And now there's been stuff that happens, but there's just no other way than it's her, you know, telling me she's okay and I'm okay and, you know, keep doing what you're doing. So that's the logo. And the logo for the foundation comes from this necklace. She actually had one of these barbell necklaces and I had one. And when she passed away, I had hers opened up and I had her ashes put inside of it. And then it's welded together to make the logo off of that. So I have a jewelry company that we work with, that they make some jewelry and sell it, donate stuff to the foundation and all. But it's funny how everything in my life ties together now. Everything from I get up and go to school and I'm teaching, you know, high school kids nutrition. But the first quarter, like right now, it's actually a nutrition and wellness class. So we do a lot on mental health. How do you deal with stress? How do you deal with losing? Fail forward is a big thing. If you're going to fail, we're all going to fail. Do you fail backwards or do you fail forwards? You fail forward. You learn from it. You move. You go forward, you know. But I'll do that until 2 o'clock. And then I get out at 2 o'clock and I might have a couple of nutrition clients that I'm talking about keto and stuff. I might have somebody that I'm trying to help prep for a show. I go to the gym. I train at the gym. I do the same thing that she and I always did. I come home. I make videos for a YouTube channel that we have where we make goofy videos of keto meals and stuff. And I might get up the next day and go to a business and do a leadership conference or fly somewhere and go do a leadership. But it's crazy to me that everything has kind of come full circle and everything is centered around, everything has happened and is centered from working out. Like, who the hell, when I was 15 years old, trying to wrestle at 92 pounds, and I'm downstairs in my parents' basement with my brother's old plastic ass weights with sand in them. My jeans, I got a picture of me with jeans and tennis shoes on and a big old cowboy belt. And I'm down there cranking out like 45 pounds, you know, thinking that I was a beast. To think that that was me at 15 and now at 53, 4, whatever the hell I am, everything ties into that. Everything. You know, I met Sophia because of that. She was 100% my person and my why. There will never, ever, ever be another. There's never going to be a day where I don't wake up and I'm not sad because I miss her. You know, I talk to her 24/7. I've learned as much from death than I have in my life, if that makes any sense. I've learned so much from that. And I still learn from her every day. I try and be a better person every day. I want to make her proud. There's boxes that her and I had to check, you know, that I want to do for both of us. But it just, when I really sit and think about it, it boggles my mind that the nutrition company, the Maxwell, the leadership stuff, everything is based off of walking into the gym. And I went to this Maxwell conference in Orlando back in August, and everybody was down there, and everything was so business focused, business, 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 business. And I'm looking at it from the athlete side, which is completely different, but it all still does this. It all still ties together. It doesn't matter whether it's business or athletics or mental health or physical health or whatever it is. It's all the same mindset. It's all the same steps to move forward. So I don't know. That's what I really hope to do is I want her organization to be a $1 million organization in the first 5 years. And I want to be able to provide gym memberships, you know, for people that are going through stuff where that gym membership might change their life. It saved my life. And it's crazy. I talk about it at a lot of the bodybuilding shows that I go to, and I'll, you know, ask everybody, tell them about it. And I'll ask everybody, you know, does anybody in here know somebody or yourself where you feel like getting in the gym and working out changed your life or saved your life? About 50% of the people every time will raise their hands. So people get it, you know, and there's such a, you know, such a reason for it. And it's just crazy to me that it's all really, you know, kind of come forward. And I'm a happy guy. I laugh. I like to bullshit and joke around. Sophia and I had so much fun. We're foodies. Oh my God. For 4'10", that girl could eat more than anything. Oh my God. Food was her thing. There were days where we would literally wake up on a Sunday morning. Babe, what do you want to do? And we're in, like I said, we're in Northern Virginia. I don't know. She's like, I want a steak and cheese. And I go, yeah, me too. You want to drive to Philly? What? Yeah. And we'd jump in the car and drive 3.5 hours to Philadelphia to go get a cheesesteak. Like, just crazy shit like that. So, you know, I'll never, ever, ever be able to replace her. But I hope I can live whatever the rest of my life is, whether it's 5 hours, 5 days, or 50 years, kind of in her honor and do stuff that's going to make her proud and be able to leave her a legacy. You know, I want her legacy to be that you can grow even when you didn't think it was possible. And again, I want that to be mental health, physical health, business, religion, depression, whatever it is you're going through. And we've provided gym memberships from people. I had a lady that was going through cancer and couldn't afford a gym membership anymore. And this gym membership, she's like, I know it'll change my life. A guy had just gotten out of prison. Same thing. He's like, dude, I can't afford a gym membership. And, you know, people laugh at that. What do you mean you can't afford a gym membership? $30, $20. If you're at the bottom, $30 is $30. And it's hard to come by. And, you know, gym owners, I've worked with gym owners around the country now, and they're phenomenal. If I call them up and I say, this is my organization, here's the website, you can go look at it. We're legit. We're a 501c3, fully tax deductible, fully nonprofit. Would you donate a membership for a year? I've never had a gym owner yet say no. Every single gym. Yeah, absolutely. I don't want them to donate it forever. Give me 12 months. Give me a 12-month membership for this guy, you know, or girl, wherever they are. And it's just crazy. You know, people get it. The athletes get it. The people at the IFBB get it. You get it when so that's kind of where I am and how I ended up here. That's why I like being able to get on these podcasts, because people just get it. I feel like I've got a unique, not necessarily a unique story, because everybody's been through shit. You know, we all have our own level of crap we've been through. I talk to these kids at school, 15, 16, 17 years old. Some of them have been through more crap than anybody deserves in a lifetime, and they're still in high school. You know, so it's not that I have a unique perspective on that. It's that I feel like I had a unique support system from starting in the gym when I was 15 to growing up in the 90s, looking at all these pros and being friends with them, to owning a gym and all the people that I met there, to now working with the IFBB, NPC, doing the stuff that I do. It's crazy to me that everything tied into literally that first day that I went downstairs in my parents' basement at 15 and was like, I want to get big biceps, you know? And that's what's put me here 40 some years later. It's crazy. So that's kind of what I want to push to everybody else. That's a long story. I apologize, but it's
no, man. I think Sophia deserves that time. I think she's proud. I mean, you know, I think the gym definitely saved my life, and it brings me to tears thinking about and like listening. And it's, you know, I believe that I would not be here today if it wasn't for the people that I met around the gym and the times that were tough. That those friends that I had made were there, or it was something that I didn't have to think about anymore. Just, I was going to the gym to have a good time, and I didn't have to worry about what was going on the outside anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, like it, I think it resonates big time with me.
Yeah.
You know,
I used to tell people when I owned Powerhouse, I was like, look, you know, I would tell my staff, I'm like, we all got to make money here. We're all here to make money. But at the end of the day, this isn't brain surgery. You know, this should be fun. And you don't have any idea what people are going through. No idea. So when they walk through that door, they need to be able to park whatever they have going on somewhere else and walk in here and live in a totally different world for that hour, hour and a half. If you're a power lifter, 4.5 hours, whatever the hell it is. We used to make fun of the power lifters because I'm like, guys, Jesus, you've been on that squat rack for like, you've had three meals while you're over there going through shit, and there's gummy bears and shit thrown all over the place and things with rice and turkey. And I'm like, we used to give them so much shit. And they're like, yeah, but I just pulled 900 pounds. Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah, you know, fair enough. Powerlifting is a totally, totally different world. One of my overnight guy, we call him Bam Bam. and he worked the overnight, 330 pounds. He, I just saw this weekend, he had a 1,100 pound squat with a suit. It's 1,100 pound squat this weekend at a meet.
Damn.
So he's phenomenally strong, just crazy strong. And his answer to everything, was eating a lot of food and lifting heavy. Didn't matter. Whatever the fuck was wrong in life, you need to go eat some steak and fucking go squat. Like, that was his answer. Dude, what? You know, you can come in and be like, yeah, my puppy's got worms. I got to pay the vet bill. You know what? You fucking need to go eat a steak and get your ass under a squat rack. What the fuck does that have to do with it? And his go-to saying was always, you know why? Because you've got weak as piss hamstrings. What? That was always, and I don't even remember how it started. I think because maybe my squat or something was weak, and he was like, I'm watching you. Your fucking hamstrings are weak. You got weak as piss hamstrings. We got to get, and that turned into his go-to literally for everything. I'd be doing books. Man, you know what? This doesn't add up. How do we do this? I got to pay you the electric, whatever the hell it was. Because you got weak as piss hamstrings. That's what's So there was a, I'll never forget, he and I were working one Saturday morning. There was this group of women that would come in, and they would get done with their Zumba classes and shit, and they would go over to IHOP. And they were all standing at the front desk getting ready to go, 10 or 12 of these women. And they're like, oh, I'm going to get the egg white omelet. And this one's like, oh, I'm going to get turkey bacon and blah, and Bam Bam, 330-pound, big Duck Dynasty beard, just huge. And he goes, that sounds fucking miserable. If that's what makes you guys happy, you guys got a miserable ass life. I was like, dude, they're customers. Don't chase them away. But he was fantastic. But he's not wrong. Like, now I sit and look at it, and that attitude fits for everything. You know, I went through a couple weeks ago. I was struggling. I have not, since everything happened with Sophia, I have not fucked up my diet. I have not missed a workout because I'm focused on doing something for her. But a couple weeks ago, I went through about a 3-week stretch. I just didn't feel good, not physically, but mentally. I'm just going through the motions, you know, was kind of bullshitting my leadership business, bullshitting the foundation. I had stuff I needed to do. Going in the workouts and just kind of half-assing them. And I literally had to sit down one Sunday night. I'm upset and I'm talking. And I said, I got to have a come to Jesus meeting with myself. And I'm like, look, I don't do this shit because I'm motivated or because I want to. I do it because I'm dedicated. There's a huge fucking difference. It's dedication. It's not motivation. You know, motivation is great. I can put on, you know, Tom Platz talking about 5 more reps on squats and shit. And I'm like, that'll get you. But that's not going to get your ass up at 4:30 every morning to go hit 2-a-days or to keep your diet straight or to go. It's, you know, it's dedication. It's not motivation. And you just have to get up and go and do it. It's funny. I'll probably get people pissed at me for saying this, but I see people on Instagram all the time and they'll come on there and they're like, yeah, I'm going to do the hard 75. Have you ever heard that? I'm going to go 75 days hard of fucking pussy. Just make that your lifestyle. Why has it got to be 75 fucking days? Now, again, it's good that they're doing it. 75 days is better than 0 days. You know, 75 days is better than 30. But half the time they'll go through it. You'll hear them. Oh, I fell off. I ended up blah, blah, blah. I got to start over. No, that's a bullshit excuse. Fucking do it. Like, just do it. Why has it got to be a hard 75? How about it's a hard every damn day? You know, I don't mean that as harsh as it comes across, because obviously it's good that they're doing that, but I find it odd that you have to have that reason, you know, to go do it. And that's kind of what I had to tell myself. I was like, pull your head out of your ass and get your ass in the gym. I have people tell me all the time, and it kind of irritates me, but it doesn't irritate me. I mean, I understand why they say it. People all the time, oh, you're so strong. What do you mean? Well, to go through everything you've gone through, you know, your nephew and niece and your mom and dad and Sophia and losing the gym and living in your car. And here you are, you've got 2 successful businesses and you teach and you're blah, blah, blah. And you're always happy. I mean, I'm post, you know, goofy shit. And I like I said, I'm a happy guy. I'm sad, but the sadness is never going to go away. I'm happy. You're just so strong. And I'm like, well, I don't feel strong. I feel like weak bitch. You know, I just broke down looking at keto ice cream yesterday and I'm crying in the middle of that. How strong can I be? That shit made me break down. But it's not a strength. It's a commitment. It's a dedication, you know, to it. Nobody was more dedicated than Sophia. Nobody. From all the pros and everybody I know, Sophia and I love to eat, but when it came to prep, she loved being in prep. And that first day, that alarm go off on 4:30 and she'd have to get up and go do cardio. Boom, her feet hit the floor and she was already up and packed my lunch and her lunch in there. And I'm laying here going, oh my God, can we just sleep a little bit longer? Let's start tomorrow. No, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's prep. And she just, you know, loved it. That was her thing. And there's no missing a workout. There's no cutting it short. There's no cheating on your diet. It's not that you couldn't, because really at the end of the day with this sport, powerlifting, bodybuilding, whatever it is, nobody knows what you do. I could go fuck up a bag of Doritos right now and nobody's going to know. Maybe when I step on stage, but I could blame it on whatever. Nobody knows. If I don't go work out today, nobody knows. It's, you just do it. And I learned that from her, is you just do it. This is what we do. It doesn't matter why you do it. There's no excuse. Just get your ass up and go. And I try and, you know, say that when I go to businesses, it's kind of the same thing. You can come up with an excuse all you want. You're pissed off at, you know, this client, or your prices got raised, or this or that, or blah, blah, blah. Do it. Makes no difference. You can bullshit your way through life and you can make excuses for everything. It would be pretty easy for me with everything I've been through to say, fuck it, and just be a miserable mess and do nothing. No, I want to change people's lives. I want to change people's lives like Sophia changed mine. And, you know, I get passionate about it, but it's frustrating when I run across people that are going through some shit and refuse to make a change to make themselves better or to get out of it, because, you know, everybody's been through some shit. My story is not worse than anybody else's, but everybody has to figure it out. You know,
I think it's the classic thing, like eat more food and lift heavy weights. Yeah. I think, no, it is that simple to some degree. Like, yeah, I understand the point of the 75 hard is, you take a break, or maybe it initiates this fine, like you finally wake up a little bit. You're like, all right, well, maybe this is like the fire that lights under my right. ass, to get the thing started, which, you know, kudos. But at the same time, I think it also can set people up for failure. It's like, I'm going to be really good for 2.5 months. And then after that, I can fuck off and go back to whatever I was doing. Yeah. It's, you want to get, do you want to get strong? Like, people would ask me that. Like, when I was competing well and doing things, like, how are you doing it? It's like, you work out.
Yeah.
You want to know how you get strong? You lift heavier weights. That's how you lift heavy weights. It's like, you constantly have to be under that pressure, and associated with that, you have to do you have to sleep. You have to stretch, all those other things that come along with that. Yeah. But it is as simple as do it. Like, get up. And like, I want the podcast to do well. You know what I did? I started to podcast more. I started to post more. I started to do the thing more.
Yeah.
I've developed some supplements. So I was like, I want to sell them. How do I sell them? You have the meetings. You send the emails. Yeah. You do the thing.
1% every day is what calling. I tell everybody. I've got so many oars in the water, and I push this on my leadership, is 1% every day. Every single day you have got to do, because it's very easy to get focused. I'm sure with you, it's easy to get focused on the podcast, and you'll do podcast, and then, okay, I did that. And then supplement, and then marketing. But then you forget about the other two. And I was good at that for a while. And now I've gotten much better at, it's 1% every day. My focus today might be this podcast, but I also have got to send out 2 emails for my leadership stuff. And I got to talk to 1 donor about, you know, the foundation. I got to do 1% every day. Now, there are some days where you might do 96% of something else, but as long as you do that 1%, you keep getting going forward. And that's in every single business, but it also stems from the gym. I told the kids, I said, here's my story. I said, you go into the gym and you go work out today. And he was like, yeah, okay. I said, you go in there and you work out and you lift biceps and you do it and you come home. You look any different today than you did when you went in there? No. I go, so the workout was a waste, right? Well, no. I go, well, why not? You went and you did it and you spent 2 hours in the gym and you don't look any fucking different? That was a waste of time. Well, no. Well, why not? Because it's not about that one time. It's about that 1% over and over and over and over and over again. And it's like that, you know, in business. It's like that with depression. I've gone through that shit with, you know, people that are, you're not going to wake up tomorrow and all of a sudden the sun is shining and you're going to be happy. But you can do that one little thing that's going to improve. And that was what it was when Sophia and I started going to the gym after I lost Powerhouse and was living in my car. We, you know, that first week in the gym, I was fat. I was sucking wind. I couldn't lift. I looked horrible. I had big, heavy sweatshirts on. Wouldn't let anybody see anything. Felt like shit. Mentally, I was a train wreck. And then, like I said, 6 months later, my physical was getting better. I dropped 10 or 12 pounds. Bench press was coming up. You know, whatever it was going on. And I was like, oh, I got a little pep in my step. I'm feeling a little bit better. Like, it just changes. And it's that 1%. That just, you know, as your mental gets better, as your physical gets better, your mental gets better. Your mental gets better. It kind of works, you know, all the way around. So I am so thankful for this sport and this industry. Curious to see where it goes in the next 5-10 years, because it's so different now than what it was. It's funny because, you know, I'll work these shows and you'll get frustrated at the bikini girls and the physique guys and this and people not. And I'll be back there and I'll be irritated. And I'm like, God damn, I can't wait till this is over. I get done and it'll finish. And everybody's like, all right, what are you doing next weekend? I'm like, fuck, I'll be back here. I can't wait. See you guys. Bye. It's that love hate that we all go through with everything. Same thing with the gym. Oh man, I don't want to go. What am I going to be tomorrow? Right. Fuck, back here all over again, doing it all over again, you know? So it's fun. It's crazy where it's come from, you know, and social media changes everything. You know, think about I'm sure even from a pod, what the hell was a podcast 5 years ago? Nobody knew anything right about what the hell a podcast was or where it was going or what, you know, and now, are you shitting me? You can talk to millions of people and get your word out. And that's mind-boggling, you know, when you think about what it is. And there's other people out there that have your same mindset. You know, that's the other thing you were talking about. When you were a kid, you had your uncle and your dad to go to in the gym. That was all you knew about the weightlifting world. Now you've got this huge audience. You post something on Instagram and 500 people that you've never met comment on it and agree with you or give you a tip or tell you something different. Like, it's, you know, it's amazing. And that's why with her foundation, I really feel like I'm going down a path. We're the only mental health organization in the country that focuses on mental health through physical strength. And I really think I hope I've tapped into something that's a little bit different, and why I'm hoping to really make it grow. So,
you know, you talk about, I didn't realize that, like, that's a huge feat. You know, I think that's huge for, I think, the understanding of what fitness really does. And I think there's, if we look in the research side of things, we want to look mm-hmm. in, like, the, if you want to go to scholar.google.com, you can look and see the benefits of strength training and what it does for the brain, what just exercise and movement does for the brain, what being in a gym and community does for the brain and for your mental health.
Yeah.
Like, all of those things that you get at a gym are so important. I just, you know, it really is a beautiful place. And I just,
did you train during the pandemic? Were you able to get in somewhere and work out, or how did that go?
We stayed open pretty much the entire time. I was at a private club. So I was at a country club and we stayed open pretty much entirely. There was a time there, I guess, for our first 3 months where I was still able to train in the gym. Mm-hmm. I think I can say that. I don't know. At this point, I don't know. But, like, it was very sparingly. Like, yeah, everything was pretty much shut down. No members were allowed on campus, we called it, or at the club. And we would train every once in a while. And I did end up getting COVID. And the first time I got COVID, I was like, I was fearful. I was like, oh my God, I have anxiety. I'm going to die in my bed. I'm at, like, yeah, I got down to like 89% O2 stat. And I was like, this is not good. And then after, like, that, the rough day, I got up and I was like, I need to go move, man. Yeah. I need to get out of the house. And so I got up, got outside and started, I just went for a jog and I was like, I need to prove to myself that I am still okay. Like, my lungs are going to function okay. Yeah. So I ended up jogging. I ended up going for like a 6-mile run. And I was like, I got back to the house and I was so unbelievably exhausted. Yeah. I was like, this is probably not the right decision.
That's funny.
But like, it was good for me to like just get out and move again. Yeah. And then after that, every single day I was out. I have to move. I have to get energy. Yeah. I have to get some vitamin D. It felt really good. What about
you? When they first shut down, you know, everything shut down. Schools were closed. Business, all the gyms were closed. And I left. First thing I said, I was like, you know, first of all, if we still had Powerhouse, no goddamn way I'd be closed. There'd be a secret knock or something for the certain people to be able to come in and train. I'm like, there's no way we would not be training. And if I had to tell the powers that be that you were painting or whatever, we're redoing it, it is what it is. But the first week or so, we would go down to a parking lot down by the house. And I have a video on my Instagram, and I've got an SUV, and it's loaded down, and sitting like this, and I've got the Rocky music on. I was like, this will be funny. And Sophia is behind it, and she's pushing it this way, and then turning around and pushing it, and I've got the Rocky music going, and me yelling at her, come on, faster, come on, do it. And it's funny as hell. And you wouldn't believe the blowback that I got from people. You really? Shouldn't be outside. This is dangerous. I was like, oh my freaking God. Are you people kidding me? It was funny as shit. Watching this little teeny 4'11" shoving this thing and my fat ass sitting up front yelling at her, being stupid, you know, with Rocky music going on. So that was in the beginning. But a friend of mine, I can't get him in trouble, but he's a National Guard, Army National Guard. And he had put together a gym at their National Guard station locally with a bunch of pieces that came from a Planet Fitness. And he had gotten the general or whoever was in charge to be able to buy it. Let's set it up. The guys will be able to use it, blah, blah, blah. Well, every night, 5 o'clock, that place was empty. National Guard was out doing their shit. They weren't allowed to come to work either. So Sophia and I would go over there and meet him and two of his buddies. And the very first night we were there, we get there and he's finishing up his workout. And I was like, oh, this is badass. Now it was in a little raggedy ass concrete warehouse, you know, a bay door, and you open the bay door up and there's a tank and some Jeeps and shit out there. I was like, okay, this is kind of badass. Right. So we get there and I thought we were going to be training with him, but we walk in and he goes, all right, when you go, just lock the door, you know, pull this shut, blah, 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 and go out. And I was like, you're leaving me here? Yeah. What the fuck if somebody comes in? Dude, I'm not military. Like, I'm not allowed to be here, right? Nobody's going to come in. You'll be fine. And I was like, fuck, okay. So we started training there, and he was like, all right, you got to keep it secret. So we named it. We started calling it Area 51. And I, like, messaged him, like, hey, you training at Area 51 tonight? Sure as fuck. We'll be there at 5 o'clock. I'm like, all right, I'll be there at 5:15. Like, that was our big. So we never missed a workout. And I got some great pictures of us. But I was like, man, if we got caught on that, I'm sure it would have been his ass and mine too, probably. But, you know, I think everybody had their own little secret stash of where they were going to get workouts in and whatever, haircuts and everything else that we all had to come through. But yeah, it was a mess, but that was fun. I told him, I said, I wanted to get t-shirts made like with the Area 51. That's out by you. You get like an Area 51 t-shirt with weights and stuff on it or something. It was crazy. But like I said, you open the door and there's a tank sitting out here and a couple Jeeps. There's surface to air missiles locked up in the, what the, and I'm over here training. I'm like, this is badass. So we had some good workouts in there. It was fun.
Like if I was a kid and I was like, if I got to be my older self and like, yeah. So in the future, you're going to get to be able to train at this place. We call it Area 51. I was like, shut the fuck up. Yeah. What are you talking? What are you, get out of here. But like, I remember I went to the Olympic Training Center to go give a speech on some like USA weightlifting and having auditory disabled individuals competing in the Olympics. So I went to go present to the national governing body out there for about a week. And while I was there, we stayed on campus and we could go and use the Olympic Training Center's like the gym where all the Olympians will train, right?
Yeah.
So we had presentations that would start at like 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. And or I guess like 9, and then we had breakfast that was made for us. We had like a whole bunch of RDs that were like behind the kitchen making the food. And I was like, well, I want to have that and I want to be ready for that thing. So, well, obviously I'm going to go work out. Like I can't like not work out. So I would wake up super early. I would sneak around. I was with like a little bit of a cohort and everyone was in bed. I'd wake up. I'd go out to the Olympic Training Center. Nobody was in there. It's like, I get my little key tag, you know, get in. It's like, wow. Like
that's cool.
I'm here right now. And like the rings are on the floor on every single rack.
That's
and
badass.
Like, I don't care what I'm going to do. I'm going to squat, yeah. I'm going to bench, I'm going to do it. Like, I'm just going to have fun, man. And it was like, it was one of the funnest experiences just to like be alone in a gym like that, yeah. especially that caliber of quality.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is like a dream come true, you know?
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
Beautiful. Beautiful time.
No, it's awesome. Like I said, I think we all figured it out as much as we could on that stuff. I was blown away by how many people were mad. I'll have to send you that video. Like I said, it's on my Instagram, and it's her pushing this damn truck, and it's funny as hell. And people were lighting me up. You shouldn't be outside. Oh, my God. Then you definitely don't want to know that I was sneaking into a military installation and getting a workout. If you're pissed at me being in the parking lot, then you're definitely not going to be happy with what the other workouts were.
It was so cool to see us like after stuff, like we didn't really open up yet. Like we weren't allowed indoors.
Yeah.
Our workaround was let's bring all the equipment outside.
Yeah.
So we just trained on the turf right outside,
yeah.
Run or on the green. And then we had like a pretty long, walkway, like a breezeway.
Okay.
And we would do what are called around the worlds. And so you go up the stairs around the breezeway on the top of the breezeway, back down under around the stairs. And we would do those for laps. Right.
That's
so
awesome.
Like if I would coach a kids yeah. camp. My kids would go and do those. I was like, all right, we already know what we're starting off with. It. We have two around the world going to get started. And they're running around the world. They're trying to race each other. And then you have the adults who are, you know, we had two, you know, standalone racks. And so we'd bring the racks outside as much equipment as we needed. And it was cool how everyone like gathered around, and some of the stuff was ridiculous. Sometimes you have to wear gloves. If we're outside, you don't have to wear a mask, but if you're inside, you have to wear a mask.
Yeah.
I was like, it was hard to train.
Yeah.
I mean, it became very difficult to do the job of training.
Yeah.
But thankfully, you know, we just go outside and you're like, that's it. It's like, yeah. We just go outside. I was like, all right, sure, man, whatever.
That's awesome. It was funny because the bodybuilding stuff pretty much stayed on. I remember the very first show during COVID, we had to have it in a different spot than we normally would. It was a hotel in Alexandria, and we were able to get in and set up. And the deal was, first they were telling us that people on stage were going to have to be wearing masks and all this bullshit. We were like, oh, whatever, we'll make it work, you know. Well, we got in there and we're setting stuff up, and I want to say there was probably 200, 300 competitors, right? Everybody's backstage. Well, the issue was letting everybody in the building, and it was two blocks. There was 500 people waiting to get in line, and they were waiting because everybody had to come in and had to show a freaking vax card or some bullshit or a test and mask, and dude, it was a hot mess. So the competitors were okay because they were able to come in and compete and do what we needed to do. But the people that were coming to see it were just pissed because they were just wrapped around the building, you know, blocks outside. It was a train wreck. I tell my kids all the time, because we talk about that, I'm like, you know, when we get into immune systems and stuff like that, I said, we will talk about the fact that, you know, we handled that completely freaking wrong. Completely wrong. I've got a cocktail of vitamins that I knew, you know what, this is what you take, this is what you got to have every day. If you start to get symptoms, you need to add the NAC and the quercetin and this and that, boom, 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 why. You know, but the biggest part that kills me was, I think the last study I saw said 80% of the people in this country that died from COVID, from and with COVID, had low vitamin D levels. And where do you get vitamin D? Take your ass outside. And what do they tell us all to do? Lock your ass in the basement. That right there. And not that necessarily that would have saved it or changed everything. But I said, when I'm looking at this and you're going, okay, so 80% of the people that are dying have low vitamin D. Let me make sure my vitamin D is good. And I feel like that got to help my percentage, you know, at some point. That was a crazy, crazy time. And, you know, it's funny because I remember I just had this conversation with my sister the other day, telling Sophia when all this was going on, you know, when it first started, they're talking about martial law and locking down the streets and what do we do and where are we going to get money and food? I mean, there were crazy thoughts going on. Nobody's ever, you know, and I remember telling her, and I was like, babe, she was kind of freaking out. And I said, whatever it is that happens, you and I are going to be good as long as we've got you and I. I'm like, you and I can figure this shit out. Whether if it's the zombie apocalypse and we got to go, whatever, fight zombies and figure shit out, we're going to figure it out. So it's stuff like that, that, you know, things that her and I talked about that come back to me over and over again. And I'm like, man, that was sort of prophetic for me to be able to say that. And now look, here I am, but I feel like she's still with me. You know, I still can feel her and still doing stuff for her. But those are the things that kind of keep me going. We talked about then, and I talk about it now, you know, you got to find your why. Why do you get up in the morning? Why do you, the kids, why do you go to school? Why are you bodybuilding? Why do you have your podcast? What's your why? And, you know, she was my why and is still my why. It's still, you know, it's different. Now I'm not, my why isn't to provide for her, to help her get her pro card or win a show or whatever. Now my why is to do something in her honor, or make her proud, or, you know, help other people because she would want that kind of thing. But, you know, you have to find your why. And that stuff during COVID, I think a lot of people lost that. It was easy just to shut down and, you know, and do nothing. I laugh at the people that you know, COVID really fucked me up. I gained 70 pounds. Well, you didn't have to. You could have taken your ass out and walked around the street, for God's sakes, ridden your bike. Like, there's a million and one things. It was an easy excuse for everybody, you know, to not do everything. So that kind of stuff.
That was the most in shape I think I've ever been, to be honest with you.
Yeah, there was nothing else to do. Hell.
Exactly. I was eating pretty lean. Yeah. I was like not wasting any money. I was like, all right, well, I'm going to do that. I'm working out outside all the time.
That was when I missed Powerhouse, though, because like I said, we would have had the windows blacked out, and I was like, you got to come up and go. There'd have been some secret five-knock bullshit or something where we know, all right, that's go let Sam in. We know he's here, you know, and we would have been getting it in for sure. There's no way we would have missed out on that. I don't miss the gym and the business side of it and paying bills. And, you know, we were 24 hours. So it was 24 hours of stress. That was always, you know, 3 a.m. Hey, something happened, something broke. You got to come deal with it. But the people, you know, I miss the people and just the community that was there. Like you said, the gym community and it's different. It's different than it was in the 90s when I was there. It's got to be different, maybe a little more like, but kind of what it was when Arnold and them started back in the 70s or whatever. There was a guy at our Gold's Gym back in the 90s that came from Venice Beach in the 70s. He trained out there. So he was probably in his 50s at this point, right? And he's like, yeah, I was out there in the 70s when Arnold and everybody was out there. We're like, really? What was it like? And he was like, dude, we would get there at like 9 a.m. You go upstairs and there was a back room. Now, nobody worked out. You were a weirdo, right? If you worked out, nobody knew what the hell it was. And he's like, we would go in and you walk in the back room and on the back table, there'd be needles, D-ball, Anadrol, all kinds of shit. And he's like, so we go, you know what? Let me take a D-ball. Let me get an Anadrol. Let me take 2 shots of test. Oh, hold on. Let me snort a line of coke. Let me smoke 2 joints. We were like, what? And he was like, dude, it's 1972. That's just what the fuck people did. Like,
fucking anarchy, man. It's crazy.
I was like, in the gym? He's like, yeah, nobody gave a shit. There was only like 10 people that came to the gym anyway. And he said that we'd get done with our workout and we'd all go to the same little restaurant. I've heard Arnold talk about this. They go to the same restaurant and they'd all sit down and eat steak and eggs and potatoes and breakfast and shit. Then they'd go home and take a nap. Then they'd come back in the afternoon. They'd all do the same shit all over again. And he was just like, yeah, it was the 70s. That's what we did. And I'm like, yeah, we'd snort a line of coke, smoke some weed, do some tests, take a D-ball. Jesus. Like, it was crazy.
And they go squat.
Yeah. And I was like, man, that's some crazy shit. So, you know, you just think about it. They were – I don't think that we're any – different from them from a mental standpoint. Like, I look at that and I can totally understand. I don't understand the snorting coke and and going and working out and but I get the mentality of it. And it was probably such a tight-knit group because they were the freaks and the weirdos, you know. And to some extent, anybody that's working out now, it's definitely more mainstream. But it's funny that you're extreme. The kids will look at me in school because I'll have, you know, I don't know, 16 ounces of tilapia or some nasty ass something plain that I'm eating. And that's weird, but it's not weird if I'm eating a freaking 2 Big Macs and a French fry and a thing of Coke that's bad for me and going to kill me. Like, it's funny that we're the, if you meal prep, what kind of weirdo are you? I don't know. I was actually didn't think I was the weirdo for wanting to do something that was healthy and good for me. You know, it's crazy. Powerlifters even more so, because the amount of food and just the mentality of, like, Bam Bam, the guy I was telling you about, this fucker will get done a squat and he got blood running down it, where he, you know, and I'm like, it's just a different crazy mentality. A different human, man. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not going, like, most, I think athletes like that, they're any athlete. I mean, I understand that all humans are athletes to some extent, but, like, competing at that level, like, you're not going on to the treadmill to walk for 30 minutes at a 2 incline and then go home. Right. You're not going on the Stairmaster for 20 minutes and then going home.
Yeah.
It is, everything revolves around it. It's what am I doing today? I know my plan. I'm going to mentally prepare for that day. And then I'm eating in, like, so that I time my meals absolutely, like, I'm gonna carb load, I'm gonna make sure I get everything right before I get in there. I have a traditional meal that I like to eat. Mine was always baked potatoes, and then with some bacon, right? Fry my own bacon, about like a half pound of bacon, put it in there with my complex carb, and then so I'm good to go for my workout. About 2 to 3 hours beforehand, we're good to go. I have it in a sack about an hour before. And then, like, in the middle of my workout, I'll have, like, another snack or a meal, half protein, half a glucose drink, like, you know, a carbo load. I think I forgot what it was
Carbolics
called.
Carbolics or one of those.
Carbolic. And then, all right, now we're good. And what I miss the most was in high school or in college during competing, it was always the meals afterwards. Yeah. For whatever reason, like, we're going to B-dubs afterwards. Everyone, let's get in the car. Who's going with who? All right, dope. Like, all right, let's go. And then there's, like, challenges around the meal. Yeah. It's like, all right, who can eat the most amount of wings? You know, it's endless wings. Let's see who can eat the most.
Sophia and I talk about, if it's not all you can eat, we're not going. I'm like, nope. It's not all you can eat. What the fuck are we going there for? You know? And I was literally just having this conversation in the gym yesterday. There is an all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet down the street here. And it's like a $9 nasty ass. You eat it and you're going to be in the bathroom for the next 3 days. And we didn't give a shit. And it's funny because I said, I know Sophia and I were a match, because it would be like a Friday afternoon or Saturday afternoon, whatever. We're done working out. And I'm like, babe, what do you want to do for dinner? I don't know. You want to have a steak? You want to get chicken? I'm like, how about we go to the Chinese buffet? And she goes, oh, I'd love that. Or Golden Corral. That's another one we used to go to.
Oh, Lord.
And when I tell people, oh, I'm going to go to Golden Corral, they're like, why are you going to eat that shit? Because it's $11 and I can sit there for 2 hours and I can have baked potato, steak, cake, Jello, salad, fish, taco, pizza, whatever the fuck I want to eat. Like, yeah, there's nothing. Yep. Dude, there's nothing better than sitting down and just crush. Vegas, you got all kinds of good places to eat out there. That's one thing.
We got a lot of food, man. We got a lot of food. I was thinking, do you know a gentleman by the name of Todd McCormick? He's out here in Vegas, and he builds stages for, like, the Olympia. He's, cool. I guess, more of a behind-the-scenes kind of guy. He got out of the industry a little while ago, and he's back. He's back in it. So, like, he puts bids in for stuff like the F1 thing that's coming here to Vegas.
Yeah, when is that? That's in a couple weeks, right? Like that.
Yeah, there's a race this weekend. I think it just is this weekend.
That's badass.
I think we have the F1 happening here very soon. So badass. He's, like, in that space. And the way he also talks about, like, the community, he's like, oh, yeah, like, I know Arnold or I know whatever. So I was just wondering if you happen to know.
Maybe if I saw him, I'm sure we've probably chewed some of the same dirt or iron or whatever it is at some point. That's one thing is, you know, like, even if you're at the Olympia, or I go to the Arnold every year. Now I used to go for just to be there and get free samples and all. Now the last 2 years I've gone for the foundation and to promote that and all. And, you know, last year I was there and I was like, God, I know a lot of fucking people. Like, I went there, you know, by myself and not thinking anything. I'm like, man, this is going to be lonely. And I was like, no, I freaking know somebody everywhere. It's amazing. You know, and cool. And it might be a member from Powerhouse. It might be somebody from a show I expedited and, you know, somewhere else. It's just, it's crazy. So I always run across people like that. But yeah, I'm sure if we've definitely been in the same place at the same time at some point, I'm sure. So,
yeah. That's cool, man. I think we could talk for fucking
I told
hours
you that. I was like, oh, no, this will be. When I went to your Instagram page, I go, oh, no, we're good. This will be fun. We'll have a good time on this. So I appreciate it.
I want to get. Yeah, man. Thank you. I think, this is massively, valuable for a lot of people. I think, perceived as, the odd person out of the room if you're, in the fitness world. And I think part of the podcast is, normalizing that lifestyle, right? I think it's being conscious about the health and decisions that we're making, about making an impact about those around you and understanding that the ripple effect that it makes, right? The ripple effect that it has. Somebody, that can be someone that is just a significant other, how they can change the rest of your lives and how impactful that is. It's just, it's beautiful. And then not only that, but then listening to that story and being oh shit, who's around me and who's in my life. And I think it's a big help for a lot of people. And I think when I was going through high school and being into fitness, I always thought that I was less than.
Yeah.
And it's everybody else knows oh, this guy can do calculus really well. This guy knows a lot about history. And I'm over here I can tell you that the bicep over here does this and sets
the reps. I can do gym math. If it's by 45s, then I can add and multiply. And if it's short of that, I'll have a hard time.
Exactly. And then I started getting more into what it could provide. And I was oh man, I can get into research. I can do exercise physiology stuff. So I learned about mTOR during my first semester at A&M or at Texas A&M, where I got my undergrad. Yeah. And I realized, oh man, this guy's working with NASA. This guy's working with NASCAR. This guy's over here at Johns Hopkins University. Yeah. Over here working on creatine. Yeah. It was all because of health and fitness. And I was a man, this is not just health and fitness. This is life and how it provides so much more to every other part of my life. And so
I went to high school my freshman year, I was 5 feet tall and 96 pounds. I'm 5'5" and I compete lightweight right now. But like I said, I'm about 182 right now, but I'm a little, but I got into working out because I was that little guy and I didn't want to be that, that little guy. And it's crazy to me to think that fast forward, 40 some years and everything I do all day long somehow ties into that first night of going down there and going, all right, let me grab these weights and look at this Flex magazine, just the crazy shit, and everything ties into it. So it's, my friends are from there, my money's from there, my job, my passion, just Sophia, everything. So it's pretty cool to see that.
It is. Well, Kelly, where can people find you, brother?
A whole bunch of different places. The easiest place is literally either 222muscle.com or sophiagramfoundation.org. They're the same website. It'll take you there. Instagram, flexin13, FLEXX13, and also Sophia Graham Foundation has a separate one, but either one of those. I'd love to be able to get in touch with anybody for a couple different reasons. One, if somebody knows somebody they want to nominate that is going through some sort of trauma or tragedy and would like us to be able to provide a gym membership or equipment or something for them, please contact me through the website. The other part, if it's somebody that wants to be able to donate, either buying some cool Sophia Graham swag, that's on the website. We've got sweatshirts and t-shirts and coffee mugs and stuff that helps. Literally everything helps. The foundation only survives with people, donating. So I always need that. But I'm also always on the lookout for, businesses, somebody who's either would love for me to come in and tell my story or at least come in and talk to whether it's a church group or a high school or a business about just growth, personal growth, that mental, physical and spiritual growth that we all have to continuously go through until we're no longer on this earth. But there's days when you don't think you can do it. And I'm here to tell you that there's a way to do it, and a lot of the stuff that we talked about. So, but all that you can get to on sophiagraham.org or 222muscle.com, probably the easiest way.
Beautiful. And I would like to thank everyone for tuning in today. Thank y'all. Share it with your friends, family. Make sure you guys go. I think anybody, a lot of my population, a lot of us are in the gym. I think so. A lot of us understand the value that the gym provides. I think that's just friendships. That's, I've met my significant others out of there. I've met some of my best friends out of the gym. And so some of the smartest people also out of the gym. Wild. Share it with the impact that you can make with with the people around you is significant. So just visit the website, go follow, nominate somebody that you feel that's definitely in need, and help create a ripple effect around you and your community. So thank y'all. I love you. Keep on tuning in. See you guys next week or tomorrow or whatever you guys are tuning in again. Thank y'all and cheers. Awesome.
Thank you for listening to the Ben Navarro's podcast. Check us out on iTunes, Spotify, and all other major podcast hosting platforms. Be sure to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes.